The Lord has forsaken me, the Lord has forgotten me. The first reading begins with that cry from the heart. The Lord has forsaken me, the Lord has forgotten me. It comes from the book of the prophet Isaiah, from the second part of that book, when the author, second Isaiah, is in exile with the people of Judea in Babylonia. And it certainly makes sense that they would feel that way. Early in the 6th century, the Babylonians conquered Jerusalem, and in the initial exile took the king and the royal court, and actually came back and took more people later. It's estimated that between 5 and 10,000 inhabitants of Judea were taken to Babylon, and they remained there for 70 years. They were taken into exile, so it's fitting that they would say, while in exile, the Lord has forsaken me, my Lord has forgotten me. They were in a place they didn't know, they were far from their homeland, and it certainly must have seemed like the Lord had forgotten them. Now it's possible, in fact it's likely, in all of our lives there have been times when we have felt like that. When we have felt forgotten, when we have felt abandoned, when we have felt that we are in exile. But today what I'd like to do is not focus on those personal experiences, but talk about a place that probably feels like it is in exile now, and would be very likely to say, the Lord has forsaken me, my Lord has forgotten me. The place I'd like to use as an example that I'd like to talk about is the country of Haiti. Haiti is about an hour and a half by plane from South Florida. It's years and years away in other ways. Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Haiti is the only country in the world that was founded by a slave rebellion, and one of the reasons that throughout its history it has had so many problems since then with the Community of Nations is that the Community of Nations really hasn't figured out how to deal with a country that was born from a slave rebellion. So there have been ongoing problems with the history of Haiti that lead it to be the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. In the last decade, though, that has gotten significantly worse. In the year 2010, in January of 2010, there was a 7.0 earthquake close to the capital of Port-au-Prince. It's estimated that anywhere from 100,000 to 300,000 people were killed in that earthquake, and it made millions of people homeless. Then, just this last October, Hurricane Michael went through the southern peninsula of Haiti, the Tiburon Peninsula. All right? This had been an encouraging part of the country because agriculture was taking root there. It's one of the few parts of the country that isn't completely deforested. It also is one of the areas where tourism was beginning to be generated. Hurricane Michael wiped out the crops, wiped out the tourist facilities. Between 500 and 1,000 people were killed in that hurricane, and about $2 billion worth of damage was done. The other thing that happened because of these two things, the UN troops that came in after the earthquake, particularly the troops from Nepal, brought cholera with them. Since the earthquake, cholera has been a recurring issue in Haiti, and many of the deaths from the hurricane were actually cholera-related. So if any country in the Western Hemisphere can share what Isaiah has to say, I think it would be Haiti saying, the Lord has forsaken me, my Lord has forgotten me. So why Haiti as an example? It's just a happy coincidence that there's a second collection today for the church in the developing world, but that was not the real reason to use Haiti as an example. To explain to you why I'm using Haiti as an example, I need to do a little footnote, so bear with me on the footnote. This past fall, the Society of Jesus gathered the representatives of the Society of Jesus from around the world gathered to elect a new Father General. This general congregation was going on at the time of the hurricane, of Hurricane Michael. And the Haitians at the general congregation requested from the Society of Jesus worldwide assistance in rebuilding houses, particularly in that southern peninsula where the Hurricane Michael had done so much damage. After the election of a new general, Arturo Sosa from Venezuela, he wanted to put into motion that request to build houses in Haiti from funds of the Society of Jesus that we would be directed by the Haitian Jesuits. But he wanted to do something a little different. Rather than send the money directly to Haiti, what he wanted to do was send it to the assistancy of which Haiti is a part. An assistancy is a group, tends to be a geographic group of Jesuit provinces. Strangely enough, Haiti is part of the Canadian U.S. assistancy. Why is that? Because of the ties between the French Canadian province and Haiti. So Haiti is actually part of the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the U.S., whose offices are here in D.C. What Father General wanted to do was to send the money to that assistancy office and have that assistancy office be in charge of keeping track of the funds and sending out the funds. However, they needed somebody to do this. They wanted somebody who had some financial experience, and since it was a housing project, maybe somebody who had experience with building. It just so happened the president of the Jesuit Conference is a good friend of mine, and he put two and two together, and he said, oh, we have somebody in Washington right now who was an architect and a province treasurer. So as of January 1st, I am in that position at the Jesuit Conference half-time, and I'm here at Trinity half-time. Hang with me, you'll see where this is going. And so last Saturday, I returned from 8 days in Haiti, 8 days of visiting the country and the sites where the houses are to be built so that I would have a firsthand understanding of what's going on there. I don't think anybody can have a real understanding of what's going on in Haiti. All I can tell you is that there is nothing in my experience that prepared me for what I saw both in Port-au-Prince and out along the peninsula. In Port-au-Prince itself, it's a city of walls that hide the property or buildings, and then there's the area from the wall to the street, which in some areas is sidewalks. In some areas, that's where markets spring up. But in many areas, that's where the garbage ends up, and the garbage piles up there. And as you drive around Port-au-Prince in those piles of garbage that border the street, there are goats and pigs eating the garbage, and there are people picking through the garbage to find things that they could find useful. Again, it's an hour and a half from South Florida, but it's light years away from our experience and what we imagine life is like. And in that area where the hurricane hit, you could clearly see the damage by all the palm trees that had been leveled, the fields that were now empty, and the houses and the hotels even that had been leveled by the hurricane. So it's an incredibly kind of overwhelming experience. But in the midst of this experience, there were a few things that really struck out, both in those rural areas and also in Port-au-Prince. Every morning, school children going off to schools were perfectly dressed in their uniforms, their bright colored uniforms. And the contrast between the garbage in the street and the kids walking to school in their uniforms is the connection, however tentative it may be, to today's gospel. Learn from the way the wild flowers grow. They do not work or spin, but I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was clothed like one of them. At the heart of the gospel today is really a question about how much we actually trust in God, right? What are we worried about? Food and drink and clothing, or are there other things that we probably should be worried about? There's a line in the gospel that should be the line that captures all this, but because of the translation that we use, it doesn't really. That line is, you cannot serve God and mammon. All right, I'd like to take a survey. In the last week, who has used the word mammon? In the last 6 months, who has used the word mammon? Okay. So at the heart of the gospel, this line that's supposed to hit us between the eyes kind of falls off our shoulder, doesn't it? In other translations, it's translated as wealth or money, and sometimes even money with a capital M. You cannot serve God and money. So why is mammon there? Perhaps the translators thought that this would be helpful in tying us back to the Aramaic meaning that the word comes from, which is that which one trusts in. Okay? So maybe it would be helpful, but it doesn't have the sting that it's supposed to. You cannot put your faith both in God and in wealth. The question is, what do you trust in? So, people who live in Haiti have to deal with those questions day in and day out. What are we to eat? What are we to drink? What are we to wear? And somehow, in spite of everything that's happened to them, they do, in general, find enough to get by and somehow produce clothing that is stunningly beautiful for their children to go to school every morning. You see, they aren't insulated by mammon like we are. We're insulated by wealth, insulated by mammon from having to really face these questions. The people of Haiti have to face them day in and day out. Where do I place my trust? Am I going to eat? Am I going to drink? What am I going to wear today? That does not make the people of Haiti more religious, more righteous, any of those things, and it's not to romanticize them. But what it does is it makes those questions much more clear for them than for us. For us, it becomes kind of an intellectual exercise, doesn't it? What would it mean if we didn't have all these things? But we have all these things, and we're surrounded by them. That question of what it is that we trust in doesn't penetrate very easily, or it doesn't penetrate like it does on the streets of Port-au-Prince or out in the village of Desarmaux, where it is a real question. In the gospel, it says at heart, what we need to do is seek first the kingdom of God. Please be aware that this is not, was an Animal Farm. Moses, the raven, always talks about Sugar Candy Mountain, that eventually they'll be going to Sugar Candy Mountain, so they should put up with the problems of today. That's not what we're talking about when we're talking about seeking the kingdom. Jesus came to us, came to this world, and he has asked us to transform this world. So, you know, in reading the gospel, the other piece about the Haiti experience that troubles me is, why are we letting it be that way? Seek first the kingdom of God, not hope for Sugar Candy Mountain coming in the future, but what are we doing right here and now? And that reflects back on what is it that we really trust in. We should be consoled by that first reading, the second half of that first reading, right? Could a mother forget her child? And God can't forget us. That is the assurance, but that's the assurance that also asks us to seek the kingdom of heaven. In reflection on these readings for today, the Jesuit, Wisconsin Province Jesuit Dennis Hamm calls to mind a poem by T.S. Eliot. Appropriately, the poem is Ash Wednesday, as we head into Lent. And what he does is quotes a line from that poem that in a way summarizes what the gospel is about and in many ways launches us into Lent. It's a simple line. It goes like this. Teach us to care and not to care. Teach us to care and not to care. What is it that we should care about, and what are those things that we should let go of? And thinking of those children walking to school every day by the garbage and the pigs and the goats, teach us to care and not to care.